This time a year ago, two senior partners, Wim de Jong and Adam Hackey, were in a bunker hammering out the final details on the biggest legal story of the decade. The merger of their firms, Allen & Overy and Sherman & Sterling. And now we are less than a week away from that deal going live.
Yes, the transformational merger goes live on Wednesday the 1st of May, meaning that thousands of lawyers around the world should be packing up their offices and preparing to meet their new colleagues. You can almost smell the excitement, the trepidation, the envy hanging in the air.
Since the news broke last May, we've been keeping a close eye on how things play out. In October, the two firms' 800 partners voted in favour of the merger by a margin of about 99%.
And since then, there's been a flurry of market movement, with partner moves and promotions culminating in a race to lead the firm, with A&O's Khalid Garusha elected as senior partner in March. But in many ways, the hard part is only just beginning.
I'm Catherine Griffiths, editor of The Lawyer.
And I'm Christian Smith, litigation editor of The Lawyer.
And on this episode of The Lawyer podcast, we look forward to the merger and analyse the five big challenges facing the new A&O Sherman. Back on the podcast, we have the original team from our emergency merger episode last year, with Director of Insight Matt Byrne and our Deputy Editor City, Rachel Maloney. But first, before we get into a big discussion about this, Christian, give us a brief summary of what we know about the new merged firm as it will be next week.
Right, so just the headline facts here, really, for those who are just catching up on the story or who, you know, like normal people, may have forgotten it. The new firm will, of course, be called A&O Sherman. It is the first Magic Circle merger in two decades. Both firms had been looking at transatlantic mergers for a while. Sherman had talks with Hogan Lovells that collapsed in March last year. A&O's potential merger with O'Melveny and Myers failed about 4 years ago. But now these two firms have found each other. The combined firm will have nearly 50 offices around the world and a total revenue of a staggering $3.5 billion. Together they will have around 4,000 lawyers and 800 partners. A&O is, of course, the much bigger partner in the merger. Their revenue globally is about $2.5 billion compared to Sherman's roughly $900 million. And A&O has around 2,750 lawyers compared to Sherman's 850. So it is largely one-sided in that sense. But it is Sherman's place in the US market that is of particular interest to most of us at the moment. And that is a good place for us to start, because the first challenge that is going to be facing the newly merged A&O Sherman is the US and whether or not this platform is really what A&O wants in the US.
Maybe we should bring Matt in on this, because actually the US play is obviously, as you said, Christian, the most important reason why this deal was done in the first place.
Okay, so I suppose a question is, where is it going to work? Where is it going to be good? And I think there is unanimity about its finance, the merged firm's finance practice. So leveraged finance is going to be fab in the States, as it's going to be probably globally. It's going to be the biggest bank finance firm on the planet, most likely, maybe with Latham, I'm not sure. But litigation is also seen as a strength. And the technology side, which we will talk a bit about later. But what I'm hearing from New York is that people are actually quite nervous on both sides. Now, I think some of that is just understandable pre-merger night fears. You know, it's a big, big deal, and mergers are very difficult. But there's some things that are not great amount of clarity, I think, yet in terms of how this whole thing is going to be run. And so A&O people are a bit nervous because they think the Sherman people are going to take over, and the Sherman people are nervous because they think A&O is going to take over. And, you know, the big thing in any merger is the synergy. It's the willingness of partners to really work together, cross-sell. This is where this merger is going to live or die. You know, the success of it is cross-selling each other's skill sets, client bases, working together on institutional clients. How willing are the lawyers on both sides are going to be. I'm sure they'll say, of course, they're going to say, absolutely, that's going to be fundamental to this. We all love each other. But it's a big, big firm that they're going to be creating. And just getting to know each other over the next couple of years is a massive task. So just going back to the specific question about New York, Sherman definitely still has resonance. I know there's a lot written about it's a declining brand, blah, blah, blah. It's true. But I think on Wall Street, it still has resonance. And I think some of that sheen is still there. So I think it will. There's some clear opportunities there.
I think what you identify there, Matt, in terms of partner jitters is really, really key. You know, there will be departures. No matter what the firm's leadership can do, there will be partners who are going to be tempted elsewhere. There are a few partners with marquee practices, particularly, as you say, in finance and in litigation. And there will be team moves. And the key thing, I suppose, is the challenge facing certainly the American side of the practice is to keep everyone calm when there will be departures. I mean, you'll just have to price that in. This will happen. Some big names will leave and be tempted across the street to sort of other sort of Wall Street firms. But the key thing is actually how quickly A&O can move to institutionalize globally those clients. Now, my bet is they will work pretty well to do that. I think the UK firms on the whole have been very successful with their systems and their, particularly with their comp strategies and so on. But actually their BD functions are pretty sophisticated. Understanding where those clients are and having those data and actually tracking those relationships across the firm is going to be really important. And so it actually understanding within the first 3 months, you know, what they need is a great big fat marquee deal that they can point to. I mean, that's not really in their gift. They can't, you know, they're going to be lucky to get that. But if they get one of those big deals early on and really capitalize that, that will lift the mood, I think. One of the things I just want to also, in terms of the US platform, the big challenge here, again, I mean, they've got the combined firm is sort of geographically and by geographically, therefore, sort of the hooks into key local clients. I'm very interested, not that many people have made much of the fact that Sherman has a pretty well-developed Texas practice. They've got three offices down there. And they've done quite well. Actually, all the rankings show that they're doing decent work. Again, it's finance and litigation. I mean, there's lots of energy. It's energy sector stuff. But and again, corporate is lacking on this. But I think that's something, given that A&O had made a big push into renewals before on the West Coast, is something definitely they can foreground a little bit. But again, they're always going to be bedeviled by the fact that they don't have a massive mainstream corporate practice. They've got some great corporate clients, obviously, as you'd expect a major Wall Street firm to have. They have precious little in the shape of private equity. And so anyone sort of looking on their kind of bench strength on that level is going to see a sort of disappointing result for that merger. Well,
private equity is always going to be the bar that they're measured against, and they're going to fail on that. So you know, that's a given, really, at the moment anyway, in terms of numbers. But I suppose also to raise that bar, they need to invest. They need to be ready to spend big money to recruit laterals, and that's a question also where the jury is out. Do they have the money? Will they have the money and the willingness to spend 10 million plus on a partner?
Absolutely. And I think this is the lesson that Freshfields learned very early on. They made amazing laterals out of Cleary and subsequently on the West Coast as well. So I think there's a clear playbook that A&O can use. I know, Matt, that you've been talking to a lot of people in New York, and Freshfields is the firm by which A&O Sherman needs to define itself, because Freshfields has, you know, organically created a really decent platform already.
It is. It's certainly not Linklaters.
And Freshfields has by and large kept its people in the US, whereas A&O has had several years where it's hired these big teams and been all excited about them. Then a few years later, you kind of look at their profiles and they're not there. They've gone on to other US firms. They've had a pretty poor retention rate of their lateral hires in the last few years compared to Freshfields.
So I just want to ask before we move on, what does success in the US look like then? You've all mentioned multiple different things that are important. You know, in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, even when people are saying, well, that was a bust or that was a massive success, what will they be pointing at?
I think they have to be very clear on how they define success. So, for example, if it is in finance and litigation, then that message hasn't necessarily come out yet. I think there are some big challenges on how you acquire clients in those sectors. But nevertheless, I think this, what success looks like, is largely going to be, you know, we'll always say it's what it looks like globally. Can we be something that's global? Unfortunately, that argument has very, very little purchase within the States, which is fundamentally a pretty insular market.
I would add something on that, that at the time of the merger announcement a year ago, they made big play of their where their revenues are coming from post-merger, 30% the States, 30% London, I think, and 40% the rest of the world. And you look at any other US firm, it doesn't look like that at all, you know. And the firms that they consider they're the ones they want to be competing with, Kirkland's and Latham's and Simpson Thatcher's and so on, that is not what their mix looks like.
No.
So what success looks like, I would have thought, for this post-merged firm is a much bigger US platform.
And as much as their massive $3.5 billion revenue sounds enormous, it is still a long, long way behind Kirkland and Latham, which are, you know, Kirkland's above $7 billion and Latham's above $5.
So I think if we can move to another challenge now, which is, I'll throw this open to my colleagues, should senior partner Wim de Jong, A&O senior partner Wim de Jong, have been asked to stick around and stay essentially for another at least 2 years, but possibly another 4-year term?
Possibly it would have been good for continuity for him, you know, just another year just to make sure it went all right. But I mean, he has been in charge of that firm for 10 years. He does probably want a break. So
yeah, people will say Wim's been there forever, which isn't actually literally true, but it might feel like it sometimes. But he's been there a long time, and surely at a moment in a firm's history and evolution like this, which is so seismic, you want someone there who knows everything and has all the experience and can just steer. So clearly there must have been a faction who didn't want Wim to continue, as well as a faction who probably did. You know, he was very well liked and is very well liked within the firm, but some people I was speaking to said they got the election completely disastrously wrong. And I don't know whether that amounts to a leadership vacuum or not. I'm sure the people who are running it now or will be running it from next week are very capable. But it just feels, intuitively, it feels it would have been a good thing to have Wim in a position there for, I would say, a year, just a transition.
I agree. I think it's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea to have your most, you know, your accomplished leader who's been around for this long, who knows the firm, and by the way, he knows the American market very well, step away. Now, he may ex officio be around, you know, as some sort of consultant, and that's fine. But actually, if you look at the new leadership team, you've got the former regional head of Middle East, Kelly Garusha, who's a new senior partner. You've got Hervé Écuyer, who's the new managing partner. He's a French capital markets partner. And then on the US, you've got Adam Hackey, who was Sherman's senior partner, who was co-chair of the Global A&O Sherman board. I mean, these are essentially two separate parts of the business. I mean, the US, quite rightly, you know, as you focused on, Matt, they really need to bulk up in the US. But you've essentially got the Sherman guys running the show in the US. You know, I'm not altogether sure that's going to convince the market that it's a fresh proposition necessarily. You seem to have got sort of the leadership team who have been, the global leadership team are coming from, well, not London. We can talk about London in a minute, but that seems a proper oddity that no one from London at all is on this. In fact, I'm not going to say it's an oddity. I just think it is insane. It's insane. I don't know what they're thinking of. It's utterly bizarre. London is still one of the most important centres to be in. It's really important politically within the global network. I think that this is an untried set of people in the States who are going to have to do all the challenges that we've identified before about making it a coherent and business with weight in the States. I think that's a major problem.
Well, I'd go a bit further than saying that London is still a major centre. If you flip it and look at what some of the top US firms have been doing over the last 6 to 12 months, in particular Paul Weiss, they're pouring money into London. Absolutely. But it's not just them. There's quite a few. We're doing US 50 at the moment, and there are quite a few US firms, London offices, who are really throwing money at growing their London office because they know it is absolutely critical in terms of the global legal market. And A&O have a chance to steer this new planet-sized behemoth from that centre, and they don't. They choose, somewhere else.
Well, we're sort of merging our next challenge in this as well, which is effectively A&O and Sherman need to answer the question of what London is for them now. Is it now totally irrelevant? Is their lack of choosing a senior leader figure from London making it irrelevant? What is London's role?
It's not irrelevant because A&O's London office still has so many key clients, including banking, also has a growing PE team in London. So it's not irrelevant, and it won't, day to day, I don't see how it will change for A&O's London people, because they're adding, I think I looked the other day, it's about 70 lawyers on that Sherman has in London at the moment. So day to day, as an A&O lawyer, it's not going to change that much, I don't think, apart from the fact you should be getting emails and calls from the US with all these new and exciting clients. And if they're not coming through, then something's not exactly working. I mean, obviously, you've got someone in Paris, it's very easy to come over to London, and a significant number of the partners here would have voted for both someone who's in Paris and the Middle East. They're used to traveling. I don't think it's as big a deal as you might be making out, because London is still the biggest office that they have.
I don't think it's a geographical proximity issue. I think it's a how well do these people know the London partnership? Look, they were elected, so they've got a mandate. So this is not, these are not illegitimate elections. There's not necessarily been foisted on the London partners, but nevertheless, I think there's got to be questions about how well they know the London, the London office pretty well.
They're the new Wim de Jong. There we go.
I suppose in some senses they might argue it reflects their new global outlook and the fact that they're a global firm rather than a transatlantic firm, and so therefore, this is a reflection of that. I mean, whether or not that transfers to reality is perhaps a different question.
Yeah, and I think I think that's a really fair point. And I think if they weren't merging now with an entirely untested and untried leadership team, I would say yes, absolutely. That's where a global professional services firm needs to go. I just think at this precise moment in the firm's development, with this major merger challenge that they've got, the integration challenge they've got, it seems a really odd leadership team. I mean, in London, A&O is not a challenger brand. In the States, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a challenger brand, it's a faded brand. So it's actually, you have to revivify it a little bit. In London, its place is secure. You'd have to go an awful long way to ruin A&O's status here. So I don't think it's not that I suspect that they are being complacent about it. But one of the things that we've been picking up and noticing and talking quite a lot, Rachel, is the breadth of practice hires that A&O has been making in London prior to the merger. Do you want to sort of recap on where we are on that?
Yeah. And actually, maybe if we go back to the fact that A&O is an established brand here, maybe that's why they haven't picked a leader from London, because actually out of all the jurisdictions out there, London's the one they're least worried about. It's quite comfortable. And they have been doing lots of exciting things here. I'm sure they'll be really happy that they've been able to hire people from US firms in London, which they were very rarely able to do before this deal. There have been hires from Milbank. There have been hires from Akin Gump. They have also hired from Sherman before, although that was before this. So yeah, A&O has done pretty well recently hiring from US firms. And it's on the private capital side as well, which really suggests that they know where they're going with that. They really want to grow that, even though I would say they're a bit behind some of the other firms here. And I think it is kind of surprising how Sherman and A&O are both feel behind the curve in terms of where PE, or what they're calling as private capital now, has gone. And I do feel like that's an area which with this merger, they probably want to be in the same league as Kirkland, Latham, Sidley. But I mean, all of those partners that we speak to on a daily basis just say it's not. And that is because they just don't have the hedge fund clients or the investment funds that are paying out the big dollars. And that's like a major area for them that they just don't have. So I think that's something for them to bear in mind as they pursue America. They've lost quite a lot of people who've told me that they've left because they don't have those clients. They don't want to be losing more of those people.
For me, the most eye-catching hire was the cyber and data team from Norton Rose.
The cyber team arrived just as they had a cyber attack. You couldn't have made that up, could you? They were very good hires from Norton Rose, and they also made some in Australia as well from the same team. Mm. So, and that's obviously a growing area as well.
And I think you'd be pushed to find a firm within that category that is making the same kind of investment in cyber and data. I can't see the other three major magic circles firms having done that at all. They've all got decent practices. You know, they harvest those practices a little bit, but they're not actually going out and actively seeding it, as it were.
Well, speaking of cyber and data, and now moving on to technology, Matt, you're our AI whiz. How much is this merger distracting A&O in particular from developing radical AI-led strategies?
Well, I think it's first of all worth underlining A&O's position in the market, because there is no doubt it's one of the leading firms when it comes to technology and its willingness to invest in technology. It's not just about Harvey, which of course got lots of headlines last year, but I did hand GPT-4-based tools to all of its 3,000 fee earners, which is, you know, pretty chunky. There's Margin Matrix, it's derivatives contract negotiation platform. There's Fuse, which is a tech innovation space. There was Aosphere, the legal tech business, which it sold off last year, I think, for about $200 million. The list really does go on, and for several years it's blazed a trail. So it's long been regarded as very forward thinking and probably the most innovative of the elite firms. That's not something that you often hear said about Sherman and Sterling. just to be relatively blunt, but they've got a cultural clash there. Potentially, I could be completely wrong, but how they bring the Sherman partners along and create that same kind of growth mindset that it really did lead to A&O investing innovation, that's going to be a challenge. And then, of course, with increased size, almost inevitably comes decreased agility. And actually, in this environment where it's all about AI, you need as much agility as possible when, you know, the offering is likely to be disaggregated. So, again, also, it's worth underlining, mergers are really, really hard to do. It's going to take them years to integrate everything. Of course, that extends to technology. And according to one or two of the experts I've been speaking to recently, so the very first thing they're going to need to do is work out how their systems work together and how they'll integrate. From a purely practical point of view, that's going to be combining the knowledge and data of the two firms. That's a massive exercise, massive. I don't know if they've already started. I'm sure there's lots of work, the prep work they can do, but they're going to have to start doing that. That's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to be very distracting. How much is that going to take away from doing the next Harvey? I don't know. But it's going to be very expensive and time-consuming. It's not all downsides. As one partner put it to me, if they're smart, which they obviously are, they'll use this as an opportunity to really clean up and structure their combined matter and client data in preparation for implementation of AI at scale across the back office and legal services. So that's quite an opportunity. And that's clearly one of the things that A&O is positioning themselves up as an absolutely technology-led business, and they're doing it really well. So that could actually create lots of efficiencies. But it is a big but that it's going to require a lot of investment. And are they in a position to invest right now at this stage?
And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, on one level, you've got, if you took the Freshfields approach, you know, buy in a boatload of really big swinging M&A partners from Wall Street, or do you think slightly more long term and go, actually, I mean, I will predict that, you know, they will launch a shared services center in the States because they don't have it. I mean, you know, Sherman is utterly behind the pace on this kind of thing. That will be their first building block that they can do. But you're absolutely right, Matt. Everything you say really, you know, rings true because there is so much work to be done on that. And those kind of decisions are slightly less headline grabbing, if you like, than, you know, sort of teams of M&A partners. But that is the most fundamental. If they can make the most of this year and, you know, get the most traction on the sort of the tech integration, but more excitingly, actually what you can do with all of that data and, you know, how you bring that to market, then you've got something that could leapfrog them a little bit
and
in the States.
And they absolutely will be focused on that. They've got some super smart people who have been right at the vanguard of legal software and delivery, and that won't stop. But what will potentially act as a break is the merger integration. There's a danger that tech teams get bogged down with systems integration. There is definitely a question about, at least in the short term, what happens to the innovation stuff. And on the face of it, it seems a no-brainer. It's a bigger firm, as Christian said. It's a $3.5 billion firm. So therefore, there's a bigger pot for future investment. But actually, there is a potential risk, which is what investment bandwidth is the capital requirement of the merger consumed, and how much of an impact will that be over the next year or two? It could actually eat into that pot for investment.
And I do think that there's an opportunity here, but that opportunity will close quite quickly. So, you know, we were hearing at the end of last year lots of market rumors that Kirtland were offering, you know, a job for sort of head of innovation at around a mil comp, you know, and all of this kind of stuff, which is not what most innovation heads are being paid. And so all it would take is for Kirtland to splash the cash and do something big, and that would be game over quite a lot of the other firms. So A&O has right now got a decent advantage, but I think they've got a year's window.
Well, look, just quickly to finish, our fifth challenge to A&O Sherman, and really it's more of a challenge to us, is what are we actually going to end up calling them? Because most firms' names don't necessarily stick in the way that they want them to. I mean, this is more of a question really about branding, and is there a branding problem?
I think in London we're going to call them A&O, and every time we write a story about them, I'm going to write A&O, and then I'll be told that it's also A&O Sherman.
Whatever.
So I think that will happen. So get ready for that one. But over in the US, they have to be called, the word Sherman has to be in there, because everyone I've spoken to today has said that A&O's bought Sherman for the brand. So, and if they're calling A&O over there, then it really hasn't worked. So maybe in New York they'll call it Sherman and we'll call it A&O. That's a bit of an issue though, isn't it?
I mean, that could totally be the case because both sides of the Atlantic are so sort of set in their ways and doing it in that way that it could become very confusing.
Well, yeah,
mainly
also,
for us, to be honest.
They're being led by Sherman people in New York, so they're obviously going to call it Sherman, whereas they're being led by A&O people here, so we're going to call it A&O. So in a way, it's still two different firms, which is a bit weird. But they'll want it to be called A&O Sherman, and I'll try and do that. But in the whenever I see the, I think it's the website where it's AOSS, that just looks like ASOS to me. So that's another problem I have. But that might speak more to my shopping habits.
I think we call them ASOS.
ASOS. You heard it here first. Yeah. ASOS.
Fantastic. ASOS.
Well, look, for the sake of time, we unfortunately have to leave it there. I think we could probably have had three episodes on this before the merger launched. But I think one thing that was interesting that I was talking to someone about the other day is that as much as we'll all get excited over the next 6 months or so, or a year, and see where they are, it's going to be that the next 5 years that will be whether or not it's a success. So unfortunately for you out there looking for a quick dopamine hit, it's going to be a slow burn. So we'll of course keep you updated as it all goes on here at The Lawyer.
Thank you for listening. You can contact us at podcast@thelawyer.com, and of course you can find out more about anything we've been discussing here at thelawyer.com. We'll be back again in a fortnight with lots of new and exciting content for you.
Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.